Kate Roffey is the president of the Demons. She's over in the West. I'm not sure she's cleared quarantine just yet. Kate, it's great to have you on the program at such a moment.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, I'm still in quarantine, so I get out midnight Thursday, but I have just received my negative day 12 COVID test, so I'm free as soon as that clock ticks over.
Are you climbing the walls?
Not too bad. They do home quarantine over here, so I've opted for space out in the country. So I'm in the Swan Valley, away from anywhere. There's not much out here, but at least I've got a garden I can walk in and some birds I can listen to. So it hasn't been too bad.
Has it given you, well, it would have given you a lot of time to ponder what's about to transpire.
It has. The 2 weeks is just an incredibly long period of time when you're sitting there waiting for the game. I know for everyone who is stuck in Melbourne, and particularly, you know, family and partners of our players who are doing it tough, it's not really that much different. I do my work online and passes the days and media interviews. But, yeah, it's fortunately not all the hoopla around here. So I sort of can put my mind on my work focus for periods of time. But I'm sure when I get out on Friday, that'll be a completely different thing.
Do you know what you'll be walking out into? Have you got any sort of sense of it?
I've done a few radio interviews over here, and they tell me that the streets are pretty much red and blue Demon supporters. They've sent me some pictures of Cozzy Pickett and a few other players that are up around on big towers in the city centre. And I know I've got to straight in to get my hair cut. Everyone in Melbourne will be entirely understanding of that. So I'm getting my hair cut first thing, but then I'm into an AFL lunch, and then I have a dinner as well, and then we're on to Saturday. So that'll when it really starts to hit me in the eyes that we are where we are and the enormity of what we can hopefully do on Saturday.
How pleased for Simon Goodwin were you, Kate, last night to see his season acknowledged as the coach of the year by his peers?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I think these are the real things, the peer awards, you know, Clary's coaching award, Simon's coaching award, they're the things that, you know, really do show that the people who really know what's going on in the industry are respecting what they're doing. But as, you know, Clary, when I spoke to him about his players award that he received, or Simon about his coaches award, I know they'd swap them any day for a premiership with their team, and they acknowledge, you know, it's a great job done, but they know that it's part of a team that's pulled together to get us this far. And I think that's what people keep asking about. What is this culture? What's going on? And I think it's just, we are one club, one team, and we all know our roles. We all play our roles, and hopefully that'll get us through on Saturday as well.
So the senior coach is always such a big part of that, Kate. As you would have observed Simon as a board member and then having come to the presidency in the first month, how would you describe him in his role as you've seen him really up close?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. I'm going to talk a lot to Goody. And one of the things that we talk about, whether it's, you know, becoming president or whether, as he said, becoming senior coach, you're never prepared for it. You don't quite know what it's going to be like. And it takes you a while to settle into that role. And I heard the clip that you played just before I came on, where Simon said, you know, that everything sort of took over him and got hold of him. And that's where you are learning the ropes, and you're trying so hard to make it all work and to control everything. And you realise that isn't how it actually works. And I think that's when he talks about the reset he went through, was actually sitting there and realising, hey, I don't have to do this by myself. There are other people here to support me. And really, you'd be aware, Jared, that we went through that review last year where we changed not the head coach and not thought of changing individuals, but we actually went through and said, what do we need as a coaching group here? And we brought in a number of different coaches who added to that whole need, I think, as a coaching group. And Simon's benefiting from that now, realising that, you know, it's not, as president of the club, it's not me. I'm the director of a board, and I have other directors that work with me. So you don't have to do it by yourself. And I think that's a learning process that Goody's really come to realise this year, and look where it's gotten us.
What's your relationship with him? What sort of contact? How regular is it?
We're always chatting away or texting away. I'm not a president who rings up and says, Goody, I think you should be playing Maxi at centre forward this week or whatever. That's not my area of expertise, but I'm more just there for him. Check in, as I do with all the players and the coaches and the staff, check in with how they're going. Is there anything more that we can do to help or provide any resources that they need? Or, you know, it's more of that supporting sort of role. If there's something we think that's not quite in line with the culture of the club, or raise that. But fortunately, haven't had to do that as yet this year. So it's really just, as you would with any manager with a staff member, you look out for them, you try to help them and guide them where you can, and be there to, you know, to be a sounding board at other times. It's, it's a really great relationship that, you know, I have with Simon and with the other coaches and the players and with the staff at the club.
What's the craving like in your Melbourne community, Kate, that you'd be tapped into it? We get the feel for it every day, the beautiful emails and the texts are coming through. How dialed into it are you?
Look, I put a post up, a friend painted their door, front door, and I posted it on my LinkedIn to say, you know, this is the true, you know, red and blue. We can't be here, but people in Melbourne are painting their doors. I think now, I just checked this morning, it's had 58,000 or so views so far. So it's, I checked that in. It gives me a reading on how things are going. People are posting their pictures and things up there. I've got Jane Nathan, who is a, you know, stalwart supporter. She was there in 64. She was 14 years old. She tells me she's painted her car Demons colours. So it's just fantastic. I mean, it is so sad that our members who've waited so long, you know, we're not playing at the G at home in front of them, but I know the boys will be, you know, absolutely focused on doing the next best thing, which is winning on Saturday and bringing the Premiership Cup home so we can all relive it when we get out of lockdown.
So, Kate, when does your Demon journey start? And it corresponds with your move to Melbourne, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm a country kid from New South Wales, actually, so we were league and union. I grew up closer to the Queensland border than Sydney. So AFL wasn't, you know, certainly wasn't really heard of when I grew up, and was just starting to come to the fore as I sort of finished high school in Narrabri. And when I came down to Melbourne, of course, the first thing everyone says is you've got to have a team. And when you're not born into it or don't have a particular reason for supporting a team, you've got to choose, and everybody tries to get you on their side. But I had some very good close colleagues who said, oh, you know, Melbourne, and they were on the bottom of the ladder. So I thought, oh, we'll go with the underdog. So Melbourne it was. So coming from outside, I have to say, outside of Victoria, you really get a sense of just how big AFL is, and you don't understand it. I think even if you live in Victoria, you certainly don't understand it if you haven't come from outside and lived here to see just, you know, it is quite, I mean, I've worked in sport all my life, and it's quite astounding just how big it is here in Victoria.
So with those fresh set of eyes, how intrinsic do you think it is to life in Melbourne, the footy?
Oh, absolutely. If I didn't, I work in sport. I came to Victoria to take up a role as the CEO of Vic Sport. So if I didn't have an AFL team, I wouldn't have had anything to talk about on not just Monday morning, but right through until Wednesday afternoon. You get a bit of a break, and then Thursday you start off with what's coming up this weekend. So it really is. But, you know, it's a different thing. I chair other boards. You know, I've been a corporate director for a long time, but the presidency of a football club is just, it's so unique. I mean, it's something that, you know, you just can't even explain just how important it is to so many people to you know, lead these clubs. It's not the size of the club. It's not in terms of financial or the size of the organisation, but it's the, you know, it's just the membership and the belief and what these clubs can do off the field. People always ask me, you know, what's the proudest thing of, you know, of being president of the club? And I say, it's what we do off the field. It's things like grassing the Santa Teresa Oval in Alice Springs with money that's raised by members, or it's your videos that our players will send off to people who are unwell, or things like that. It's the things we do off the field that make me proudest. And I think that's what, you know, being a football club in Victoria really is all about. It's just so much more than what happens on the field.
Has it changed your football watching experience now that you're president?
I have to say, people ask me, what am I like as a watcher? I have to say, funnily enough, I seem to be a little bit calmer.
Yep.
And I think that's because I have, you know, so much more involvement in, you know, what's happening. While I don't, you know, give my opinion on what should happen on the field, I understand, talk to the coaches about what they're trying to do and whether we're delivering and executing. And as well, for me, it's, we've got other business to attend to. So as soon as Saturday's over and we hopefully get over the joy of that, then it's back to AFLW season and our facilities development and other things that just keep going on. So I think in a strange way, I've become more composed, I guess, because I'm actually a bigger part of what we're doing. Having said that, don't try and interview me on Saturday morning, Joe. I'm not sure how well I'll go then. I'm okay now where I'm out in the country and away from that hustle and bustle. But yeah, it brings a different perspective to it. I still try, you know, try not to determine whether the game's going to be won or lost in the first 5 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, that the affliction of every supporter is there somewhere.
Exactly.
And so I heard you say that you knew Peggy O'Neill in previous business activities, yes, and the like. How, what sort of inspiration or support or resource has she been to you as you've come to the Melbourne presidency?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Peggy's been fantastic. And even before that, I mean, there still aren't many female directors. So we have a female directors get together, and Peggy's, you know, she sort of, bless her, runs the spreadsheet and the coordinating for that. But, I've been a first female of a board that looks after shipping channels, for example. So when you're in that sort of area as first females doing things, you naturally tend to gravitate towards speaking to each other about what it's like and experiences, and even just talking about, you know, other things in general. So I've spoken to Peggy for many years about different things, and certainly as Kylie and I have both taken over in presidential roles, I know there's no one that's more delighted than Peggy, because she, you know, I think she said to me, I'd be devastated if she finished up as president and there wasn't a female, you know, in situ at one of the clubs. And she said, now I've got two. So she's really, you know, proud of the fact that there are more women coming through. And there's no doubt that Peggy's had a huge role to play in that. And, you know, a lot of people reach out and speak to Peggy, but I certainly do. And, you know, she's always fantastic giving a bit of input and insight into, you know, just what it would be like in grand final week. Now, yep, nobody knew what it would be like here, but she said, you know, just try and enjoy it. She said, but take it slowly, because otherwise you're exhausted by the time you get to the game. But yeah, she's fantastic. And I think, you know, we all know that Peggy will leave a huge legacy in the AFL world in particular, but just in women's progression up these ladders in general.
So much of what we've seen in recent times in footy, a lot of the analysis is the X's and the O's and the way the game is played. And yet there's a clear and obvious connection between culture and alignment and connection. And maybe it even is something a little bit spiritual as well. What, how would you define that in what you've seen as to how it all comes together to produce the right X's and O's out on the field?
Yeah, it's a strange thing, isn't it? We talk about it on the sports scientist by background. We talk about the flow state, or when everything just clicks. And I think that's what we're seeing now with the Melbourne Football Club is a long journey. I mean, I've been on the board for 8 years, and we've certainly rebuilt the list, and we brought these players through together. And a lot of that, you know, being able to execute on the field is experience and mental toughness. But there also comes a time, and I think this is what's happening now, that final piece of the puzzle, when you start to realise that it isn't about self, and it isn't about you winning the game, it isn't about you over-executing or trying to do everything. It's actually about trusting the team and trusting everyone to know their role and play their role. I think that's what we're seeing now, and that's what the selflessness you talk about. When you're commentating or listening to games, you say, oh, the selflessness is there. It's not silly selflessness, but it's understanding that it doesn't matter if I kick 5 or 6 goals, so long as we win the match. And I think that's the cultural maturity that you're starting to see at Melbourne, and that's what's really coming across on the field. If Clary has a great game 1 week and Christian has it the next week, and then we see an absolute ripper like Maxi played a couple of weeks ago, then...
Yes.
That's okay. You don't have to do it every week, because there'll be someone who does it. And, you know, I think that is a cultural, mental, I don't know what it is, Jared, universal energy, whatever it is, but it seems to be clicking for us now.
There should be something mystical in sport, and I reckon there is. Mm. Kate, it's great to catch up. Good luck with your last 24 hours or so, and enjoy release into the world.
Absolutely. I'll be looking forward to that haircut, as all Melburnians will fully understand.
Good on you. Kate Ralphie is the president of Melbourne. She joins me from quarantine in Western Australia. Now, did we just get hit by an earthquake? That was amazing. 0433981116. Did that just happen everywhere? The building fully shook. The glasses on the shelf are rocking back and forwards. I've never felt a tremor like that in Melbourne before. Are we all in? Did we all feel that? That was a proper earthquake. Blimey. He had organised to talk to Josh Bruce about packing merchandise and the like. Josh, great to have you on the program.
G'day, Jared. How are you, mate?
Did you feel that earthquake?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was sitting in the car, just parked on Beach Road at some traffic lights, just like the previous caller. And, yeah, the car just started shaking. I was like, side to side, side to side. I was like, that's weird. Like, I was at a standstill. And then my wife called me and she just sprinted in and got our son out of the cot because the whole house was shaking and dust falling from the roof. She thought it was going to fall down. So he was asleep. So, yeah, pretty scary. God.
Good Lord. Good Lord.
And I've got friends. I got friends back home in Canberra who said they felt it as well. So it must have hit a lot of the East Coast.
Jeepers.
They messaged kind of simultaneously. So it's... Yeah, first one I've ever felt. It's very scary. Hope everyone's okay.
Yeah, yeah. These are strange times. Hey, Josh, I wanted to have a chat. We saw the picture tweeted by the chief executive a couple of days ago that you're in at the club packing merchandise, which I think is the most beautiful image. How are you keeping yourself busy this week?
Anything to get out of the house, Jared, as you know. No, it's. I was in at the club doing some rehab stuff on my knee. And I'm doing some coaching with the AFL Women's as well. So I had a little bit of time to kill in between those two things. And the guys up there are just getting absolutely smashed with merchandise purchases, which is just fantastic to see. And, you know, the entire Barker's Cafe there is just awash with merchandise and postage and all sorts of stuff. So I sat down for a little bit of time and had a chinwag and helped them out a little bit. I mean, I definitely wasn't there for 8 hours and Bainesy put a little bit of mayo on it, that's for sure. But it's really good and they're doing a fantastic job and the members are coming out in full force.
So there's a tyranny to being separated from it at this time, Josh, but there's a clear connection that you've been able to maintain. How are you finding it?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously is extremely difficult at times. You know, the 2 hours on game day are the hardest. And then, you know, the hour afterwards, especially after the victories that we've been having, are really tough not to be there and be involved and feel that in person. Even on the sidelines as an injured player, it would be great to just be there and experience it. You know, but obviously I'm not the only person that's, you know, made sacrifices this season. And I'm just so proud of... you know, of the group and of the players and of the staff and everyone that's, you know, given up their time and spent time away from their families and loved ones to help us get to where the team is this weekend.
Are you having emotional fluctuations given that it's a 10-year career that's taken you through a few twists and turns and just how close you were to it?
Yeah, big time. Yeah, big time. And obviously, it's only natural to feel a tinge of sadness and a tinge of jealousy. And, you know, there was games where I burst into tears after the Brisbane game. You know, I just burst into tears at the final try and I couldn't hold it back. I just felt, you know, just such a longing to be there and to be involved in finals like that. I feel like you know, I thought that this year was going to be the year for me. You know, everything seemed to be lining up perfectly and to have it ripped away at the last minute, it's been bloody tough to deal with. But, you know, I've had nearly 2 months now to kind of process a little bit. And, you know, I still have moments in every single day, but it is getting slightly easier. And I've moved on to just wishing the team to have as much success as we can. And I know that, you know, we're such a young side, so fingers crossed everything goes well and I can get back in next year and have another tilt at it.
Do you have to go through a grieving process with it, Josh, as it happens in the dying seconds of a game so late in the season? I don't imagine there's really any rationalising it. How do you work through it?
Yeah, it is like a grieving process. I mean, I've had close friends and loved ones obviously pass away, but it's not similar to that. But the grieving process is tough. Like, when they did the initial test on my knee, I just knew it wasn't there. It was fully ruptured. I broke down for an hour and a half, and then, you know, once I got that initial hysterics out of the way, I felt a little bit better. And then, you know, I've cried probably at least every week about it.
Yeah.
So yep. It does get easier with time, as all things do. So.
Have you had any conversations or any messages that in particular have resonated with you and you've drawn some level of comfort or guidance from?
Yeah, I mean, I've had some really, really amazing messages from people. You know, the people and the community that have reached out to me is just, you know, it's really humbling. One in particular was Chris Grant. Obviously, he's the director of football at the Dogs. He messaged me about a week in and, you know, kind of explained to me that he did his knee at the same time, at 29 years old. And, you know, he at the time thought that maybe it was curtains on his career. But it ended up being a really powerful thing for him, and it actually prolonged his career for another 5 or 6 years. And it was a really special message to get from someone that I respect so much and has achieved so much in his career. And then, you know, some of the other coaches that I've had have reached out to me. Obviously, you know, Choco Williams is coaching with Melbourne this weekend, but he was my initial head coach of the Giants, and I had some really tough times at the Giants. I probably wasn't developing as well as I should have. My professionalism definitely wasn't up to standard. In my first few years, I didn't really knew what it took. And, you know, he sent me a really beautiful message about how much I've developed as a person and as a player. And just to hear that from some of the guys, it's really humbling to know that, you know, it's definitely not all doom and gloom. So.
Yeah. So how will Saturday night look for you? Have you thought about it? Are you trying not to? Do you have a bit of a plan? What's your approach going to be to the grand final itself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. It's obviously, it's going to be a long day waiting for a night game. But I think I'm going to try and watch it just with some friends and family. You know, Lim Jong lives in the area. He's another freshly retired player. So I might try and watch it with him. And have a couple of beers and just try and relax and watch it as a spectator. It's gonna be tough either way, but hopefully we can get over the line.
And you found yourself drawn into the overall debate about medals for members of the team and for the overall. Have you actually got a firm position on that, or have you been drawn into that sort of unwittingly?
I did get sucked in a little bit, and I was tongue in cheek.
Yep.
With the way that I was saying it, but I think that it's probably tradition has to stand. I think, you know, there's hard luck stories, and there's been hard luck stories for the last, you know, however long. So I think that, you know, the 22 or 23 guys that run out there are the ones that do really win it. So, and I think now that it's funny, like if I did actually get presented with a medal now, I'd almost feel like I didn't deserve it. So it's kind of an interesting one at times. So.
It is. It's for the overall, I think, rather than for the individuals who find themselves, unfortunately, in the position. Josh, thanks for taking the call. Safe travels. Yes, check in at home. And it's been great to see the connection to the club, the FaceTimes during the songs and the like. It's been quite brilliant. So good luck with the rest of it.
Thanks, Jared. Good luck with the earthquake.
Yes, thank you. Josh Bruce with us this morning. So I'm really pleased that he was able to take that call. From where we'd rather be, let's head over to Perth, where Adam Gilchrist is living in the grand final city. Hello, Gilly.
Yes, good morning, Jared. You're right. It's we're very fortunate as we sit and listen to situations around, well, the parts of Australia and none the least over there in Victoria and Melbourne. That's extraordinary news to us all here about earthquakes on top of everything else that's going on. So our heart and mind's with you all. And, we're here, obviously, in great anticipation of trying to put on a good show for everybody around the grand final. It's the anticipation and excitement is continuing to build. It's really exciting to be a part of.
Does it feel like the biggest sporting event that Perth's had?
Gee, I hadn't stopped to think of it like that in regards to rating it, but it's going to, I would assume it would have to be right up there. And I think that the thing that most people are saying is that it's probably unlikely that ever happen again, certainly in our lifetime. And we hope not, because we hope that by this stage next year we are back to business as usual, and it is back at the spiritual home of AFL and the grand final, certainly there at the MCG. So, yeah, I think that's probably the word that most people are using, unique. It is probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. and it will rate up there as one of the great sporting events, I think, as far as spectacle go, the way it's presented and how it'll look and feel. And I think we all hope that it's just an actual match, a football match that lives up to that by way of excitement and being an even contest.
Are you busy this week? Is there every function in the world going on? Are you in demand?
No, there's plenty to get to if you wanted to. There's been a few offers here and there, but it's, I've got a couple of things on. But it, I mean, what's extraordinary, what I was doing this morning was my son had me tapping onto Ticketmaster, not to buy, but to reserve a seat for the open training session on Friday for the two teams. I think 25,000 they're allowing to go there. So it's a ticketed event without costing any money, just so they can track and trace everybody. But, wow, I mean, that's going to be half full, the stadium, just for a captain's run. So that shows you the hype that's around. And, yeah, there's plenty of events on here and there and people trying to sort of get themselves in and still scrounging for tickets to the game, although I think that's a bit of a lost cause at the moment.
Has the Gilchrist family chosen a team to barrack for on the day?
I think it seems to be Melbourne, like a lot of the sentiment seems to be general. I'd say it's a tough choice, isn't it? Two very likeable teams when you're independent, but I think that's the sentiment, again, as I mentioned last week, buses driving around with Give 'Em Hell on it and the Melbourne Demons branding all over it. But it's going to be intriguing to see how it unfolds and, just the way the teams are preparing, they're sort of kept a relatively low profile given that, what was it? The Bulldogs only just a couple of days ago got out of their sort of quarantine period. But the spotting of players around various cafes and so on, that's fallen away by the wayside. It's They've homed in now back onto the serious stuff. So it's going to be very wonderful to be a part of. And, as I say, it's I think Melbourne probably just in front by way of the sentimental vote from over in the West, from everyone, not just the Gilchrist household.
So international cricket, Gilly, right now it's a bit of a mess with the tours that have been cancelled to Pakistan. I find it hard to be critical from the outside, as if you are in possession of a credible threat that's coming from government, it's probably the governing body's obligation to remove the players. But it plays much broader than that for the aspiration of cricket returning in Pakistan. How have you taken all of it in?
Yeah, and we're sort of casting judgment from afar with minimal detail. I guess that's the two withdrawals from Pakistan. First of all, that the New Zealand team that were there not disclosing any detail on the security issue that caught their attention and to the point where they wanted to get the team out. So I guess that's proving frustrating for everyone to make an assessment on that. And then a few days later, confirmed that they'll be heading to India at some point, probably the double blow. And then the triple blow for Pakistan cricket was England announcing yesterday that they're not going to go there with the men's or women's team for a few white ball games leading into the T20 World Cup. That one is probably even more interesting in that there's no mention of security. It really is just a statement around fatigue of being in bio bubbles and what they deem as the best preparation for the T20 World Cup, which I thought a couple of games against Pakistan in those conditions would be good preparation for a T20 World Cup. But I think it's a show of just how powerful players' associations are in the cricketing landscape at the moment. Jared, particularly in the stronger nations and the more healthier by way of financial health nations in the cricketing landscape. I'm trying to work out whether this bodes well or negatively for the Ashes with what England have done. By not going, I guess that alleviates another period in a very short bubble. It was only a 4 or 5 day trip that they had scheduled. But if that freshens the players up and their mindset up, it might allow them to think more clearly about coming down for the Ashes, or it might be an indication that if the players don't want to do something, they're getting that message through and they're you know, going to withdraw from tours they don't want to go on.
It has, what it has freshened up is the bitterness around the big nations and whether they actually do fulfill their obligations. And obviously we know that we know some of the machinations that have been in play with Australia and India and England over the past 3 or 4 years. It's not terribly reassuring that a series could be treated so lightly as to pull out because of fatigue.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think as, you know, not that Australian cricket's been perfect in this, obviously they pulled out of the South African tour last, or was that earlier this year, calendar year. I think the uncertainty of, I think we're a bit more certain around COVID and vaccination levels and so on, that perhaps the health aspect of it should be pretty well covered off now for teams to tour and visit. So it's then the discussion of bubbles and the mental sort of strains and stresses. Sending a second team, I'm sure there would have been enough English cricketers there that were keen to go and take that opportunity, like Australia did to the West Indies and Bangladesh. They didn't have anywhere near a full strength team, but they still sent a team, and it helps fulfill commercial obligations and broadcast commitments. And the players, I think, will just need to be very careful as a collective group. And there is a world sort of body, FICA, of the Federation of International Cricketers Association. And they might want to just remind players that if they go too hard in these areas, it could all fall over.
Yep.
The financial side of it will stop, and it will have huge impacts on not just the health of the game within countries, but those individual players and their ability to maintain a very, very strong and happy and healthy existence from it.
One of the great commodities in cricket, Gilly, through the years has been a teenage tearaway. An Australian's women's team revealed one yesterday in Darcy Brown, who was quite spectacular in her 4 for 33. It ended up a terribly lopsided affair once Haynes and Healy got hold of the Indian attack and bludgeoned them all over Mackay. But that the 18-year-old who bursts onto the scene, not on debut, but gosh, did she make an impression?
Yeah, that was brilliant, particularly after Vilemic was ruled out, to have a bit of raw pace in there and just aggression. Very exciting, and that's in any cricket. But the pace and velocity and of very so many more parts of the women's game, that's been one of the greatest increases in and exciting additions in recent years since they've all been able to be basically full-time athletes and develop and progress and commit to the time and effort to get stronger and be quicker and faster. And that's a whole new dimension. So any first bowler in any form of career is very exciting, particularly when it's on your team.
It was a thumping big win. Gilly, great to chat. Enjoy grand final weekend. I reckon for the kids in particular, it'll be something they'll never forget.
Yeah, it's huge. The build-up's massive. I've got to give it a little mention, just very quickly, Jared, on the Gilly and Goss show on Friday morning, a very unique pre-grand final edition of the little Friday focus that I do. I've managed to speak to the captains of the last 10 premiership teams.
Oh, wow.
About one moment in that grand final, the respective grand final win. Was there a moment, a passage of play or a speech that saw them over the line? So that's been really interesting. I've managed to get them all, and they're in the gun or in the can, and that's going to be on Friday morning. So it should be hopefully entertaining and interesting listening for everyone.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. Well done, well done. That'll be great listening on Friday morning. Enjoy.
Good on you, mate.
Adam Gilchrist on a Wednesday. Hi, G Re Perth and big sporting events. It's a bit different, but when Bondi brought the America's Cup home, the city stopped and the ticker tape parade was awesome. The AFL Grand Final is in good hands. Scotty's in Perth. And Geraldo, still, the biggest sporting event in Perth is the 2006 Ashes Test that Gilly took Monty Panesar to pieces and nearly scored the fastest Test 100 of all time. 0433 98 11 16, temper a mattress like no other. Our interviews with Australian stars and legends for Australian Made. Australian Made, it's important to buy Australian right now. Look for the logo and be sure it's Aussie.